Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and I love to explore the changing times, the shifting collective consciousness in a great hope that it's going to really bring heaven to earth. And there is a wonderful movement going on around the world emanating from India, and it's called the Oneness Movement. And it's really intended to shift as many people, to awaken as many people as possible to actually move into the collective at a higher level of consciousness. And we have a wonderful trainer of the Oneness Blessings with us today who's very active in teaching and leading groups in Seattle and probably in India. Welcome to the show, Peter Gillies.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm very excited about this whole idea because I'm kind of a, 60s radical change dreamer. And it seems like this Oneness Blessing movement is really waking a lot of people up to peace and consciousness, would you say?
Yes, you know, in the last 2 years, the numbers have increased tremendously. When I went there in 2007, we had, at that time, the largest class ever of 200 people. And now they're having like 1,500 people on campus a week, taking the courses and meditating in the temple and doing all of those different kinds of activities.
Well, how did you get into it in the first place?
Like, well,
who are you?
Arjuna, our dog, wrote a book about the Oneness Movement, and my wife happened to bring it home one day and left it on the bed, and I opened it. And the first thing I read, the first sentence I read, and the only sentence I read, was healing the ancestral patterns of behavior.
Wow.
Well, literally, since I was 5 years old, I figured I had lots of problems in that area. But when I was 18, I dove in on a real search to try to heal those patterns. And not a lot of things worked. I came aware of a lot of things, but nothing seemed to heal. They just seemed to move around. So I shut the book right there, called the Oneness Line, got an invitation to go over and take the courses, and went over and spent 3 weeks in India taking the initiation course.
Was it a shock? Was it what you were looking for?
More.
Oh, really?
It was so delightful. Maybe it was the Indian culture and all that was going on over there, the food, the people, the intention. But the unconditional love and support and the gentleness with which these courses were taught allowed lots of people to experience new truths about themselves. Not always pleasant ones, but also pleasant ones. And we had a great time, and by the end of it, we walked out of there all a little bit different, and it kind of started something in all of us that's continued. I say all of us like I know. It has for me.
So when you said shifting ancestral patterns, how does that show up in your life? Is it like a freedom, an expansion, creativity?
Well, you know, the age-old teaching is that truth will set us free.
Right.
I didn't really know what that meant until I experienced that the truth about who I am in particular in any given moment is what sets me free from having to maintain and operate in a reactive mode through all of these personalities that were created through conflict or stressful issues in my childhood. I created a personality to deal with it, and when that kind of a situation would come up, that personality would respond automatically. And what's happening now is rather than that automatic reaction, things have slowed down enough in my consciousness that I actually have an awareness to see that personality come up and choose how I would want to respond in any given moment. That doesn't mean that happens all the time, but it happens more often than not.
Wow. Well, so you're saying that in the processes, it undoes all of those reactive kind of programmings that we have, or some of them anyway?
I don't know that it undoes them so much as they'll always be with us. But what happens as, from my experience, what happens is as we meditate more, as in the case of oneness in the sharing of this Diksha blessing, it's somehow allowed a greater time between an input of something and my either reaction or output by choice of something. So that there was there's now a longer period of time that I'm slowed down my senses enough that I can respond rather than react.
Oh, I see.
So the thing still triggers the same thing, but the difference is I have a choice about how I want to respond, and the triggering and the emotions that come with the triggering don't last very long anymore. Maybe in some cases 3-4 seconds, 5 minutes, but I no longer carry the suffering, you know, days, weeks, months.
So, Peter, how long did it take to get sort of confident about that? Was it just the first 3 weeks, or have you just worked on this for a long time?
Well, I think what happens is the awareness is set in motion and it starts working on its own. Hmm. Back in 2007, I don't think the energy on the planet, the number of people openly and actively working on these sort of things has made the time today much easier and faster than it did when I started in 2007. Mm-hmm. I see people getting into places now that took me years to kind of get into that are kind of happening much more quickly now. Mm-hmm. Now, whether they're permanently in those states, I can't know. I'm not living with them. Mm-hmm. But it seems that way to me. And I know for me, things are happening very quickly.
Well, let's start at the beginning in kind of a way anyway. Bhagavan and Amma started this. Can you tell us a little bit about the seeds of it?
Well, I could go on for hours about that. But initially, Amma and Bhagavan were born as avatars, meaning they knew that their mission in life was different than other people. Bhagavan used to sit in his window when he was a little boy and watch people walk by, and he could sense and feel everything going on in them, their suffering, their joys, their desires, and he didn't really know what to do with it. But as a little boy, he talked to his parents, and by the age of 7, his parents' friends were coming to him for advice.
Oh, wow.
So when they got to be an adult age, he knew there was something that they were supposed to do, and they were... The interesting side note here is there's an 850-year-old... lineage of avatars that have been into the planet in India that predicted everything that's happening today, and was the lineage that both Amma and Bhagavan were born into.
Hmm. How did Amma and Bhagavan meet? Did they meet as babies? Or?
You know, I don't know the whole story. They did not meet as babies, but I assume their parents set them up.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of traditional there, yeah?
Yeah, that's the condition. I'd like to see that happen in the U.S. That'd be interesting, but... They were arranged back there, and it just happened. And Amma grew up telling her mom that she was going to marry God. Now, her mom kind of accepted it because she wanted her to marry God, but her father was a little disturbed by that. And Bhagavan, I don't know the story on his side, but the marriage was arranged, and it worked out perfectly. So We have two avatars, male and female, representing both sides, or kind of, in our material world, the polarities of our life, the male and female aspects, united in one, and it's a much more powerful experience and necessary at this point in our planet's development.
Mm-hmm. So they started this movement. When did they start the Oneness University? It was before 2007, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's where we started. That's right. Mm-hmm. So they got together and they opened a school, And the school was an academic school to begin with. But they were going to teach differently, and everywhere around the school they had interesting, very interesting signage up, like the awakened one is free from all knowing, the unawakened one is caught up in knowing. Hmm. And they didn't teach that necessarily, but these were all over the school. They didn't give out grades. They never criticized anybody's work. They were always supportive and allowed kids to go into what they naturally were gifted at while teaching the rest of the courses too. And this school, I understand, for years tested the highest in India without ever having these kids' grades. Hmm. Well, in 1989, I think it was, the phenomena of the golden ball descended into Amma Bhagavan's son, Krishna. Hmm. And Krishna walked into Bhagavan and said, "Hey, Dad, this golden ball descended in me, and I saw my entire life in front of me, and I saw these relationships, and they started healing in front of me." And Bhagavan said, "This is my story, how I tell it." Mm-hmm. "Good, good, good, keep going," and shoved him out of the room.
Sounds like a busy dad.
Yeah, so, well, I think everything was kind of predetermined here, because I think Bhagavan may have known what was going on. So his son comes back and continues to tell these stories of these amazing healings going on and the clear vision of how his actions as a human were creating suffering in his life and other people, and how the act of forgiving and forgiveness were the strong tools with the help of the divine to change the patterns and course of his life. So Bhagavan asked him, do you think you can transmit this to somebody? And he said, I have no idea. Bhagavan says, well, go grab one of your classmates and bring him back in. And so they brought in a woman named Sarmadashini, and Krishna put his hands on top of her head, and something started to happen. And when he took his hands off, Bhagavan asked her, did you notice anything? She said, yes, this golden ball descended into my head and into my body.
Wow.
And he said, any reaction? She said, that was enough. So that's how the movement got started. And in 1980, and I'm not sure the date is right, but 1989, when the phenomena fully descended into the school, it was awakening people spontaneously in the city around the school. And it caused a little bit of havoc, because that shift from an ordinary mentality that we all live in today into an awakened state can be disruptive and ecstatic and glorious. And people were crashing their cars, and chaos was ensuing, and people were laughing like they were on drugs and watching ants crawl across the floor. And so they had to bring the energy back in, and Bhagavan realized then that it was his mission to help monitor and find a way to bring this into the world where people don't have to suffer these spontaneous things, that it can be a gradual process. Well, he predicted in 2012 that that phenomena that occurred back then was going to be introduced back to the planet this year, and right now it's coming back in the form of a oneness meditation with a guide from India named Doug. Now, it's a very unusual Indian name, but Doug is from New Jersey and the only American that was accepted as a Dasa in India. And he's now presently touring the United States, sharing this wonderful blessing with people through the gazing of the eyes over the audience. Hmm. And I've experienced it three times, and the amount of, and it's not peace, I'm purposely using the word stillness, because peace is in juxtaposition to non-peace. Stillness may be in juxtaposition to non-stillness, but the stillness almost felt like nothingness, in the sense that there was no need to label or recognize or polarize this, that, or the other thing. There was just absolute stillness, and it still resides in me, but it's not, after I walked out of that room, it was with me permanently for 3 or 4 days. And then it started subsiding. I can recall it now, but I'm not living in that state anymore. And for those who are listening, they will be in Bellingham here, I think, on the 19th.
Yes, we're looking forward to that. 19th in Bellingham.
And I didn't mean to put that plug in there, but, you know.
No, people want to know where to get hold of this. Now, tell me, let's go back to the golden ball for a minute. That's a download. We're getting a lot of universal downloads these days, but that's a huge one, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. And, you know, I want to tell everyone that Ama and Bhagavan do not believe that in any way that they are the only source for this information. There's Ayushante and Eckhart Tolle and all kinds of wonderful people sharing the gift that's coming to the planet right now, probably more visible than ever before. They have been given this one mission to awaken mankind, and they have a limited amount of time to do it, and that within the next 2 to 3 years, they want to be able to awaken at least 70,000 people, which will create a tipping point that will allow the rest of us to just kind of naturally fold into this awakened state where, I mean, if you can imagine an awakened state where you have no polarities, mm-hmm. and everyone is one with each other, how could you have wars or hurt or not feed each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a very, very exciting concept. So let's take you back to the Oneness University. What kind of processes did they put you through, and what is the Diksha? How does it all work, Peter?
Well, that's another large topic. You know,
Well, you're handling them really well. I trust you. You can handle it.
Okay, we're going to try to condense this down. The original process in 2007 was to teach us about how we operate in the world, that we have these personalities and charges in us that just automatically come up, and we use them as a reaction point, that we don't really have a choice in our reaction to situations. An example, if someone were to pull in front of us on the freeway kind of quickly and close to us, we'd get mad at them, and we'd go to work, and we'd say, this guy, you know, he did this, and you go home, and you go, this guy did this. So we have this charge based on that experience, and we would carry it forward into our days. I mean, all of us have had disagreements with our girlfriends, boyfriends, spouses, all our relationships. And how long do we carry those things forward in time? You know, we carry them very long.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is we learned about the personalities. We learned how they work. We learned about charges. We saw how charges work. And then they explained to us this process of receiving this divine tool, and Diksha is just one of the many tools on the planet to guide us,
mm-hmm.
would help us to start understanding and seeing how we were working in the world and how we could heal that. Which it has done for me in an amazing way, not always comfortable, not always easy, but like a porpoise, you dive down into the water, which we'll call the emotional part, and then you come back up for air and the freedom of what you've gained and learned, and then you go back down again. And this porpoising sort of movement in my life has created incredible movements in my ability to be present with people, to be more of a responsive person than a reactive person. And then the teachings went on, and then that was necessary, he thought, for the Americans to understand the psychological aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're teaching less of that, and we're doing more of the experiential. Mm-hmm. For tens of thousands of years, Mukti and Shakti and Bhakti have been tools that gurus only shared with very devoted disciples. Now Amma Bhagavan are sharing it with the world.
Hmm.
They're saying the masses have to be able to share this with each other so it can't be squished or squelched or stopped, that we should be the people sharing it with the people. And he wants us to be a community thing, not based on Amma Bhagavan, but based on your divine, in your community, sharing this with each other so that we cannot lose the impact of what we're doing because we're doing it in community.
Well, tell me this. When you talk about the divine, is awakening getting in touch with your own divine?
The biggest, to me, the biggest and most important thing that Amma Bhagavan teach is called the Antaryaman, which is the indwelling God or divine. God has some stigma for some of us, including me, but we'll use the word divine. What that is Amma Bhagavan say, you can use us as your divine. You can use Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, or anybody you want as a divine. You can use space, energy, light. You can use a personality of a friend of yours that you're very comfortable with. But your divinity has to be something you're absolutely comfortable and feel secure with. And then you give your divine the personality you want to give it. You know, and my main note that it's unconditional loving. It does not talk to me in parables because I can't figure those things out. You know, you just got to tell me what it is.
Straight up.
Don't make me go on a puzzle hunt to figure out what you're telling me to do here. It has to have a sense of humor. I can talk about sports. It can accept me in all my forms and fashions. And so what you do is you start to form this relationship with this indwelling God, the Antaryaman. And the divine, because the divine is all things and we can't have no concept of what that means, the divine wants to fill any vehicle you want it to fill. Because Amma Bhagavan...
Well, that's wonderful. I like that.
Yeah, Amma Bhagavan say that they are just one aspect or personalities of the divine grace.
Hmm.
We are all personalities of the divine grace. Some are sent down here to help mankind move. Jesus was filled with the divine personality and was one with the Father. And there's many people like that now on the planet. We have many historical people like that. But there's just one divine source that we all personalize and religionize and spiritualize, but in fact, there's just the one.
And we possess, make it our own, right?
We do, and that's part of our condition is we like to form groups and belief systems. The mind and the ego like to polarize and separate,
mm-hmm.
and our significance in those positions, because basically what I've learned is every moment of my life is based on my needs for significance. Even speaking in this phone call is feeding my significance. So thank you for closing me one more time.
Oh, that's funny, actually, feeding yourself. Now you're going to make me think for a minute here, you know. So,
not that.
Yeah, that's a dangerous thing. So awakening is actually getting in touch with that part of you that is divinity. And you're saying they teach about moving into community. So it isn't just that I have and you don't, you have and I don't. It's something we take some and pass it on, right?
No, it's totally the process of coming together in community. The teachers that we hold weekly in Seattle, and they do in many parts of the country, are about community coming together and sharing the tools that have been given to us with the intention to awaken the divine within us. And again, we may have singing bowls or gongs or meditation things. They're all just tools to awaken our vibratory rate to start to receive more and more energy and more grace and awareness.
So tell people about the Diksha and how it works, because I've been fascinated. Years ago, I used to go in the Bay Area, and there was always one teacher, and he would do the Diksha on all of us. But nowadays, it's very different, isn't it?
It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Diksha is a hands-on blessing. It can be transmitted through intention also. And there's other ways that I won't get into because they're not, I don't think we're ready to handle that quite yet. But the hands-on one is the most common one, which is people will come in and the people that have been initiated to share the blessing. And initiation is a 1 or 2 day course that gets you in touch with the Antariyama and your Antariyama and teaches you some of the basic principles about who we are. And Bhagavan says the only truth that exists is your truth. We can't know anybody else's truth, and the truth about us is what we experience in a moment-to-moment awareness of ourselves.
So the truth changes, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because most of us, you know, I'm a spiritual guy, and I don't want anger, so I put anger somewhere in the back burner. It's buried in my body someplace. And I'm supposed to be sweet and nice, so that personality comes up, and I try to be sweet and nice. Well, the truth is, I have a personality that wants to be sweet and nice, and the truth is, I have anger.
Right.
And so I start to own the anger. It starts to free up the energy in my body, because these aspects of ourselves, sadness, rejection, abandonment, anger, rejection, all reside in our bodies, and the energy it takes us to deny them, because that's not who we want to be, and I don't want to feel that way, they become orphans in our being, basically. And every once in a while, they'll tug on us by coming up and surfacing with anger, resentment, jealousy, whatever it is, and we work our tails off to bury it back down there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but like an orphan, if you pick the orphan up and hold it and love it, it feels nurtured, it feels loved, and it dissipates its aspects for attention.
Right.
So like an orphan, as we experience the truth about who we are, and we embrace those parts of ourselves, we don't have to do it publicly, then they start to become our friends, they start to become our loved ones. Our orphans start to feel loved, and they start not needing to act out, and they stop having the control over us that they have. That's what it's saying the truth will set you free, in my opinion, is.
Hmm.
The hidden parts of ourselves stop coming up and looking for our attention because you're loving them.
Hmm.
And they lose their charge to the act of noticing, being aware of them, and giving them love.
So what are the tools that help people to get to those realizations and help with the loving of the orphans inside of ourselves?
Well, the Diksha is that tool that scientists have proven that Diksha actually creates new neural pathways connecting the right and left hemispheres of our brain.
Yeah, I saw some brain patterning maps online that were about what happens when you have a lot of Diksha.
It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically start to be able to switch between our right and left brain, you know, left being very analytical and linear, and the right being very experiential. So the Diksha is a great tool for allowing us to start to come into the great understanding of that. The courses that are taught are great help to sort of give signposts of things to watch out for and how it might work for you. And, you know, I have learned in taking what I'd learned in 2007, it's changed over the years, as you would hope it would, and I've grown into it. And I've learned lots about myself. I've even created some sayings that I think are quite wonderful.
Can you share?
And great for me, but I share them with people like it might be great for them, but I really don't know that.
So does that make you significant, Peter?
It works. I try to, you know.
So I want you to tell people how, because what's really precious when you go to a Oneness Blessing Circle, it's interesting, after some teaching, people take turns going around and putting their hands on one another's head, right?
Yes. Yes.
But that,
when I went to India the first time, there was a man there. He was an ex-Hell's Angel, and he had tattoos all over his body. And as you can imagine, a personality like that might be, when he started Diksha, he was doing it daily with his community in Laguna Beach, and they were giving each other like 20 to 30 Dikshas every day.
Hmm.
And he was the most peaceful, loving guy I could imagine. I said, wow, when I get back to Seattle, I want 30 a day. Well, I'm not sure quantity is always necessary, but in the blessing groups, we share probably anywhere between 5 to 10 blessings for each person.
Hmm. And that means that people circle around and you will receive 5 to 10 yourself.
Right. We go where there's an open head and we place our hands on it. And we do that for an hour, hour and a half.
So what do they have to do to put your hands on someone else's head? How do you prepare for putting your hands forward? Do you have to do anything?
Yeah, there's an OAC course called Oneness Awakening Course where we teach about the personalities. We teach about the freedom in owning and seeing them and the truth about it, about creating a connection with your own personal divine, whoever that is, about the tools that we're giving in courses to help people receive more and more energy and to clear our bodies and allow us to be more present. And then there's an initiation process. It used to be a hands-on initiation process. It's now just a ritual that we do. I mean, the rituals that we do, because these are Indian avatars or Hindu religious, and they're fun. I mean, I love ceremony. I mean, I love Christmas in the Catholic Church because the ceremony is incredible and the pageantry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've brought these ceremonies that were sacred to India are now being done in the United States by people like me.
Don't know
the words I'm saying, but I'm saying them.
But you... You can initiate people here. People don't have to go to India anymore, right?
Exactly. And I'll, while I like my significance, the word you is not quite appropriate. I am participating in the initiation process, yes.
Mm. Would you say it's a transmission?
Yes, absolutely.
Through you. So once you have gone through the trainings, then you can be one who is able to transmit. Is that right?
Yes, right.
So then you get out of the way, right?
That's the hope. And I got to tell you, when I started doing this in 2007, I'd get over someone's head and I would be thinking all kinds of thoughts. You know, I hope they're getting a good teacher. I hope they think, you know, I'm a good person. I'm doing a great job, you know. And I had all these personal thoughts going on. Now, you just get into this really sort of peaceful state and you just constantly pray for the divine. Or in this case, I pray for Amma Bhagavan because this is their tool. I liken it to an ice cream truck. If you're sitting in your living room and an ice cream truck goes by, you don't run out the front door asking for the bakery truck to stop. You scream for the ice cream truck. Well, Amma Bhagavan's ice cream truck is his Diksha. So I pray to Amma Bhagavan to allow their Diksha to come through me cleanly and efficiently and give this person what the divine source would want it to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much less about me thinking about getting recognition for it than it is about being more present with them.
Do you see amazing results at any given time, or have you seen other people besides our Laguna Beach Hell's Angel? Have you seen people go through wonderful changes?
I have seen people lose addiction to alcohol and cigarettes. I've seen people get off of depression medication. I've seen people heal their relationships with their parents. Now, Bhagavan will tell you the greatest good we can do is to heal our relationships with our parents.
Okay.
That they are the primary relationship that we need to start with and continue. I mean, it's not a one-time shot.
Oh, darn.
Yeah. You know, I've been literally in therapy since I was 18 years old, if I could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked about my mother and my father and my brother for, seems like decades. It has decades now, without much assistance in my process. Now, I can tell you, with the act of using the divine to help me forgive and ask for forgiveness, because a relationship goes both ways, well, we can look at our parents and say, you know, my mom died when I was 7, I have abandonment issues, and I have this, and I have that. As a little kid, I created certain personalities to deal with that, and they react to the world in a certain way. Now, because I've been able to go back and forgive my mother, because it wasn't her choice, and even if it was her choice, she had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
I can forgive her for that. I can find compassion in the life that she had to live to have left the planet that early. And likewise, I can see how I created some havoc in her life by the way I was as a little kid and my needs and my stuff, and that I must have driven my family crazy. I still drive my family crazy.
Why? Because you're seeking because of that?
I just have a lot of energy, and I'm a fire sign, and I'm pretty passionate about things. I can be overwhelming. You know, God bless me. It's a gift on some side, and it's a hindrance on another. But so these relationships with our parents start to heal, and Bhagavan says if you heal your relationship with your father, the flow of wealth into your life will increase. And if you heal your relationship with your mother, your barriers and obstacles in life will drop away.
Hmm.
And he says you can empirically prove this by going back and healing these. And he has hundreds of stories of how this works. And I can say the same thing, you know. I don't have as many as he does because people don't come up and tell me their stories. I just have my own personal stories.
Hmm. Well, I'd love to hear some of this. But tell me this, do you feel like, you know how we all have inherited this, inherited tendencies and a lot of lineage stuff. Do you feel that that has also dissipated since your work with the Dikshas?
Tremendously.
Really?
Tremendously.
Is that ever exciting, eh?
I mean, I used to get in relationships with women, girls even, when I was younger, and they never worked. They never worked.
Hmm.
And I always blamed them. You know, the worst thing we can do is have a reaction to something. Like we get, someone says to you, you didn't do that very well, and I get angry, and I get mad at the person. What I'm doing is I'm blaming them for my anger, because what they did is they made a statement, my reaction to it was my reaction.
Mm-hmm.
My reaction could have been, well, wow, what do you mean by that? Or, wow, I should look at that. Or, you know, there's 100 different reactions to it, but my anger is my reaction.
So they pulled the lid off your anger, really.
Yeah, so what mm-hmm. you do is you thank the person for the gift, and you look at your anger, mm-hmm. because why did I respond with anger rather than curiosity or abandonment or hurt? You know, why was it anger?
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see that people are just out there pricking our wounds for us to see who the truth is about ourselves, but if we project them on somebody else doing it, we miss the point.
Right.
We are all victims at that point. Anytime we blame somebody else for how we're reacting, we're victims. See, now I'm starting to get emphatic again. So
well, it's an interesting thing. So you talk about the community and giving Diksha and the blessings and so on. How many blessings does it take before you really begin to feel a shift? I suppose that's personal again.
I don't know that you can qualify that in a general sense for everyone. I really can't answer it. You know, if you wanted me to really answer it, I'd probably say I've seen people have, some people, we all respond differently. We all have our own personal awakenings, and we'll all be totally different from each other,
mm-hmm.
because we all have different gifts.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, you see changes immediately, you know. They just, other people like, oh, I didn't get anything, and I don't like that, and they walk away, and then 6 months later they show up again going, you know, I got to give this another try.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole imagination of response is happening.
Why do some people, Peter, in a gathering when the diksha is given, why do some people cry a lot or laugh a lot in paroxysms or, you know, absolutely uncontrollably?
I think it's called joy. you know.
Well, some of them scream. I'm not sure that's joyful, is it? I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, the truth is, lots of things can get triggered, you know, because we're made up of a myriad of, I call it our gang kind of scenario, personalities and hurts and wounds and joys. And somehow a lot of us are much more accepting of a sadness or a sorrow than we are of being able to express joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been my case. I mean, what you focus on is what you get, and I've been focused on healing myself, so what do I look at is all my junk. So I've gotten pretty good about that side of it, but oneness has brought the joy back into my life, too, because it's shown me that. So when people are sharing Diksha, the blessing givers and the people receiving the blessing can have any kind of reaction, from hysterical laughter to sadness and crying to peacefulness to nothing to some really clear thoughts. Anything can come up. Whatever is particular to your case, whatever you're divinely seeking is going to come present for you.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because sometimes when I hear them go into paroxysms of reaction, I kind of wish that had happened with me. It feels like they've gotten some freedom or something.
It's true. We all like to judge ourselves by what's going on around us. It's the natural state of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You just notice that that's what you're doing at that moment because there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, we all have all of it in us, and we'll all get to it. If we're truly on this path, we're going to experience the hurt and the sorrow and the joy and the laughter and the uncontrollable. You know, the funny thing is a lot of people, when they hear that uncontrollable laughing, it bothers them and they leave.
Well, it's a little bit, makes you a little nervous at first.
Yeah, well, if someone's crying, they can sit through that.
Mm-hmm.
People associate this joy with like, this is a horrible thing for me to even go into, so maybe I shouldn't.
Oh, stop. Let's be horrible just for a minute. That's part of the deal.
But, you know, in India, sometimes when we do the dancing to music, they have this fun, it's like tribal dancing, you know, when you see in the movies, they've got the smoke from the fires, and they got the drums pounding, and people are dancing wildly, and it's ecstatic dancing. They're laughing and crying, and the freedom to do that is freedom. But people see that as threatening, like they're on drugs, or they're in a cult, or they're doing something really unusual, and in fact, it's everything but that.
Hmm.
You can't do and be that free on any of those other courses other than the connection to that joy inside of yourself. And it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's worth going for 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find yourself sort of threatened or frightened by that, you want to just sit there with your threatened and your fear and say, what am I afraid of here? And just notice what you're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it doing in your life that you have this fear?
Mm.
I mean, why wouldn't it be a fear of someone having joy? You know, it's like, is the fear that something's taking me over that I would express joy that exuberantly?
That maybe you're a little crazy or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But I was in that category, too. The first time I saw it, I go, whoa, what's going on here? And then I joined in with them and found out it was the best thing I'd ever done.
But it is like you were saying at the beginning, we have personalities and we have all our reactions nicely sort of packaged behind this facade that we use, right?
And that's where the awareness comes in. We get to witness our truth.
Mm-hmm.
Look at, I am pulling back from them having joy because it's threatening me in some way. What is that about?
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with me because they're laughing. I am feeling this. Wow, there's an awareness right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. That's the beauty. That's the truth. See, you can't do it wrong.
No.
As long as you're owning the truth about what you're experiencing, you're perfectly on course, in my opinion, to freedom. And you don't need a teacher or anybody to do that for you if you set the intention to see the truth about who you are in any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And not blame it on somebody else or say, hey, everybody would feel this way in this situation. That's a way of escaping it or projecting it. It's really quite interesting. It's a simple process, yet because of our makeup, we make it difficult.
So it's really been a huge change time for you, huh?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I've gotten a little more passionate about it. But
Is that not good?
I tend to be a little sheepish about it because I talk emphatically and I talk like I know and I talk like I'm telling everybody what to do, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm so happy with my experience, and I really pray to the divine that I can express it in a way that people might get some glimmer or hope or some recognition of something they can do to help them with their suffering, because this really is about me and my suffering and what has helped me. And that's all it's really about. And the other part is about my need for significance and wanting other people to find similar freedom.
I think that from you and your emphatic nature, whatever you're calling it, is the feeling I get is that there's a kind of a wonder of life possibility and divinity coming through us that I think is just very infectious. I think it's wonderful.
Well, I accept that. Thank you. That's very beautiful. I would have to listen to this again and write that down. That was wonderful.
But here's the other thing is I think we should be doing this sort of thing with people who are running for office in the country. I think that what we're talking about is shifting the collective, which is one of my kind of fascinations on the planet. Is it not? Shifting our ability to run things differently, non-linearly.
Yeah, you know, I think, and this is a cliche, but I think it's true, we can't change anything external from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we can change ourselves, then we'll start to change the world around us because it will relate to us differently. And if we can become free and we can become present with the divine grace that surrounds us and is us, then what else can be around us? And Bhagavan says that only 70,000 people are needed to awaken, and I definitely want to be one of those 70,000 because, one, personally, I want to be in that state, and two, because I think it'll help. But the first one is I want it for myself.
How can you tell if you're awakened, Peter?
Good question. I don't know. Here's my theory on that. My theory is if you're not awakened, how can you know if you're awakened? If you're awakened and there's no polarities, how could you know tell anybody you're awakened? Because you wouldn't know that you're awakened because there's nothing to polarize it against.
So it's just a beingness that is without suffering, is that it? A beingness that doesn't see polarities.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of aspects to it, but those are the two ones that attract me, my personality, the most, is to not be polarized with things, to not be separate from things, to not be creating suffering anymore. You know, God bless the people that come in and out of my life. I've shared wonderful times with all of them. I've created a lot of suffering with all of them, and I apologize and ask for forgiveness from all of them for the suffering that I've created. But that's just the human condition, and I don't feel badly for it. I'm just thankful that I now have the awareness to see it, and I can ask for their forgiveness.
Wonderful. And you've actually done that, have you?
Yeah, I'm going to choke up a little bit here. Yes, I have.
Aww.
It's a very sweet experience.
Aww. Now tell me, thank you for sharing that. It's wonderful. Do you go to India regularly, or is that necessary?
I've gone once or twice a year just because I can afford it and I have the time to do it, but no, it's not necessary.
Mm. So a person, you could receive the golden ball, the transmission, the downloads from just being at home here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, people have confirmed that. You know, the paradox in this awakening thing is Amma and Bhagavan always put up little messages. Their teaching is not really teachings. They're sayings. Like the teaching for this week is the awakened one is free of all knowing. The unawakened one is caught up in knowing.
Mm.
So the thing about that is he's showing the juxtaposition of separation.
Mm.
So our desire to know and get more and get the most, and God knows I've been to India 7 times because I want the most, is just me thinking I need to do something to get more. And I believe by the time I could honestly, I mean, in all truth, just sit in my bedroom and know that the divine is there and ask for the divine grace to fill me, that's all we would ever need to do.
Hmm.
But I'm still in the state of thinking I need to do stuff. And there's no doing that needs to be done, actually.
Except going to India could be delightful, is it?
Oh, it's so fun.
Is it?
For us phenomenology junkies, you get a good ride. it's the M ticket on a Disney ride. It's way past the E ticket.
Ah. So, because I would like to go over there, but I do realize that you don't really have to.
No, you don't. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. And when you go over there, it is a series of classes. It's a 21-day course. There's a different course for trainers. Is that right?
Yes. There is a trainer's course to become a trainer. They have courses called the deepening course, which is where they want to deepen your experience with the Antariyaman. And as you can imagine, the courses keep changing as the energy gets higher and rises more.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes less about teachings and more about experiential stuff and more about processes and putting yourself in the direct line of the divine transmission.
I should think that that would generate a faster awakening.
It might.
Mm-hmm.
It might. But then again, maybe the doing might slow it down. I have no idea. Bhagavan has never told anybody they have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's just offered the classes, and we have passed the word around to people, and the numbers keep growing. In the state I'm in right now, I would want to go back to India anytime I could. But I am receiving so much grace in the form of, like, this tour that Doug's doing, and the weekly deekshas are just so beautiful. The energy is increasing on the planet. The Mayans predicted it. The Tibetans predicted it. The Hopis predicted it. You know, 2012 seems to be a universal date that many indigenous cultures predicted that these changes would start occurring. And I don't know if I've been brainwashed or what, but I'm telling you, my experience is that the energy is increasing and my experience of life is increasing too.
Well, that's wonderful. Also, you can, for people listening, you can see Bhagavan giving teachings, but his energy over the internet is absolutely amazing too, isn't it?
Yeah, on the oneishuniversity.org, Bhagavan has weekly webcasts on Saturday morning at 9:30 in the morning and 10:30 at night, where he'll come on the screen and he'll meditate with us.
Mm.
And just sitting there and meditating in that energy is incredible. I mean, the energy can be transmitted. You don't need to go someplace to get it. You
mm-hmm.
can get it by sitting in a quiet place or even in a noisy place. You can get it through pictures. You can get it through trees and plants and stuff. But Bhagavan, in order to support all of us, goes on the weekly webcast every Saturday morning so that we can be directly in touch for those who want that direct experience of seeing the human form of this divine energy. And that's all his role is to be an incarnation in human form of divine grace. You know, people say lots of things about Bhagavan. The truth is he lives a very simple life. He's only traveled outside of his providence twice, and that was because he was requested to. He and Amma live very simple lives. He meditates and works about 20 hours a day.
Hmm.
He doesn't have any possessions. The temple and everything are in trust that he has nothing to do with. Those other people run it. The money flows in and out. And like I said, in 3 to 4 years, they'll probably just retire someplace quietly.
Hmm.
So it's not about a following. It's not about a group. It's not about anything. It's about us individually finding that collective in all of us.
That's wonderful. So tell us about Doug Bentley again, that he, as a, he's kind of like you. He's not accepting of the status of a guru, is he? But what is he doing?
No. Doug is a New Jersey guy and about as real and funny and entertaining as you could imagine a TV show of a New Jersey guy would be.
Mm-hmm.
He's very bright, very animated. He went over there and literally begged Bhagavan to let him become a monk or dasa, and Bhagavan kept saying no, no, no. And then finally, Doug got him to acquiesce, and they brought him into the order, and he's been a monk now for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And he's been the liaison with the United States.
Hmm.
Here's a funny story. Bhagwan tells Doug, okay, I'm going to send you to America, and you're going to do this ID chair, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be wonderful, and you're going to do it, this is how it's going to work, and do it this way. And Doug goes to Bhagwan and says, well, can I practice over here? And Bhagwan says, no. Doug says, why? Bhagwan says, because I want you to experience your fear of whether you're going to be supported by the divine or not.
Uh-huh.
So Doug goes to the first DC gazing, that the oneness meditation, and he gets a message that it's time to come downstairs and enter the hall, and he gets in the elevator, and it's still the same old Doug, and he's walking towards the door, and it's the same old Doug. And now he's starting to get nervous, and he opens the door to the thing. It's the same old Doug. He steps inside, and boom, down comes this amazing grace. He says it was like being filled with unconditional love and acceptance of everything, with this overflowing joy. And he walks into the hall, and he's like floating. And he goes up, and he sits down, and he looks out, and he sees this room of 350 people, and he says, I am so in love with all of them. I go, well, it looked like you were in excruciating joy. And he says, well, it was like that. It was like this unbelievable amount of joy and love and compassion and connection. And he says, it was just amazing. And then he says, he steps out of the door, and there's this coming down time, and then boom, he's back to kind of normal Doug. He's been changed a little bit because of the experience, but he said Bhagavan wanted him to see that he was sent on a mission and that the divine grace would be with him and that he needed to trust that.
How wonderful. What a wonderful experience. That was in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, that was in February. I think January or February. I can't really remember. But, you know, Doug's the most honest guy, and he'd just tell you the truth of what happened when he shared that story. It was like, you could just hear him saying, oh, my God, what am I going to do? What's going to happen? I'm going to get in front of this room of people.
Well, for listeners who want to catch his tour, because he's going to be in Bellingham, as you said, he's going to be in Vancouver tomorrow night. And Seattle, when?
He's in Sunday. He's in Seattle from at 6 and 8 o'clock, and he's in Bellingham on Monday evening, and I'm not sure of all the times right now. I don't have them in front of me.
But there is a listing on the website, isn't there?
Yes. Yes. There's also, I'm quickly looking it up on my internet here, so
okay.
Forgive me for not being on top of this. there's a website that's called Oneness Meditation NW.eventbrite.com.
Okay.
And so Seattle's at 6 to 7:30 and 8 to 9:30. Bellingham is on the 19th from 6 to 7:30 PM and from 7:30 PM to 9 PM. Portland is at 11 AM to 12:30 PM and 1 PM to 2:30 PM. We're keeping Doug busy.
Mm-hmm.
Rainier is on the 20th from 6:30 to 8 and 8 to 9:30.
But for people who are in different parts of the country, it's all listed there, isn't it?
Well, on this site, this is just our event.
Oh, okay.
The one for the full events, I think you would go to oneissuniversity.org.
Okay. And you'll find out where he is.
And they'll guide you to all these places, yes.
Well, we West Coasters are kind of excited about his coming.
I'm telling you, you know, it's an amazing phenomenon in the sense that I came out not with peace but with stillness. And I don't know how to tell you the difference, but, you know, when you look at things and there's no dialogue going on, there's no descriptive, there's no words, there's no emotion, where you just see things as they are,
mm-hmm.
and everything's perfect where it is, that's just where it is, and that's state lasted with me for a good 4 or 5 hours afterwards. It was like, I remember having this experience in my 20s I called it Nirvana back then, and I thought, wow, this is boring. There's no emotions. There's no entertainment in this. Now that I'm in my 60s and it occurred, I'm going, hey, I like this.
Well, we have to sign off or they're going to hook us off stage here. But I've so enjoyed this discussion with you, Peter Gillies. And it's just wonderful. It's very awakening. How's that?
Well, thank you so much. I do enjoy these, and I enjoy the opportunity to share because it is what I like to do. And I'm so grateful to be doing this, and much grace to everyone.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much. That has been Peter Gillies talking to us about the wonderful oneness movement, which is waking us up all over the planet. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening, and many blessings to all of you. And tune into the website and join in on the awakening. Good night, everyone.